This podcast is sponsored by Athletic Greens. Now, you've probably heard of Athletic Greens from 1,000 different podcasts, and the reason why I believe is because it works. This is something I've been using every single day, and the biggest things that I've realized for myself is that I have more energy, I rarely if ever get sick, my poops are better, okay? There's multiple benefits here, and if you are interested in trying it, I have a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 AG1 travel packs by using the link drinkag1.com/Farzad. And my gut tells me, no pun intended, that you're going to love this product. Now onto the podcast. Dude, how was Rogan?
It was cool. It was really cool. Yeah, I was glad I got to do it. I went to Austin for like a Neuralink tour and a bunch of other stuff and just everything happened to align. I did like Lex Friedman and Lex introduced us. So it was pretty cool.
That's awesome, dude. That's so sick. Did you expect this level of attention and sort of how much the population has sort of like, you know, found your story so inspiring, like, you know, once you did the stuff with Neuralink, or has it just taken you by surprise?
No, like I knew it was going to be a big deal. Cursor off. Let's get rid of that. I knew it was going to be a big deal because, you know, it had Elon Musk's name attached to it. So I was like, I knew it was going to blow up in some way. I didn't really care about what it did, like, for me, to me, as far as like fame or anything goes. Basically the whole time, like Barrows, the people doing the study at Barrows Neurological Institute and Neuralink, they were all just like, you know, you're allowed to be as vocal and as open and as public as you want to be. We won't like put any of that on you. If you don't want to do any of it, then you don't have to. Barrows was like, we're here to protect you. So if there's ever anything that you don't want to do, anything you don't want released, just let us know. You don't have to be the public image of this at all if you don't want to. And the way I've always seen it, just like, yeah, I don't mind. Like, if it happens, it happens. I don't really care. And so then when Neuralink was starting to like talk about maybe like that first stream, the first live stream that I did with Bliss was just like a minute or whatever of us kind of chatting. I was like, yeah, that's pretty cool. Like, I don't mind. Let's do it. Control seemed to be pretty good. And, I don't know. It was just a good time. I don't really care. Like how people see me or think of me. It is interesting to see how many people are like inspired by the whole thing. That kind of was a little shocking. Cause I don't really see myself in that way. I was just like, yeah, I feel like anyone given the opportunity would have done what I did. So just kind of seems like the right thing to do.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I can tell you like following, you know, Hans and I are both psycho. Like we follow the Musk space very closely. Yeah. You know, the channel that I have is like Tesla, SpaceX, a little bit of Neuralink here and there. And it's something that, you know, at least that I find interesting is how these technologies are kind of paving the way for a better, more hopeful future. And it's just like, you're just such a freaking incredible ambassador for it, bro. Like you are so good at what you do, truly. You come across really well on camera. You're super well spoken. You're just a dude. Like I can just tell. Like yeah. We can just sit here and chat.
Yeah.
And you know, like talk shop. So I just want to give you kudos for that, because I know it's like, I'm sure it's overwhelming in some respects too. You know, because there's just such a big change to your life. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of positive change and some negative stuff too. But I just want to recognize you're just awesome. I don't know.
Thanks,
awesome.
Man. Thanks, man. Yeah. I'm just a guy. Like it's always how I have been. I've never I've never been weird about talking to people. I've always been a people person. I've always been pretty comfortable like on stage and stuff. Never been like shy in front of a crowd or anything like that. So this just all sort of fit. I think what like Neuralink needed, what Barrows needed for the study, like having me as someone that can go out there and just kind of talk to people like I do, I think that it was a perfect fit for all of us. So I'm happy to be along.
That's awesome. I think you mentioned, I can't remember if you mentioned this on Rogan or somewhere else, but have you gotten, how much of a response have you received from people that could benefit from this study? Like, have you seen a gigantic explosion of people that could benefit from Neuralink or something similar?
I've had a lot of people with disabilities reach out to me. It's something that I am really, probably one of my favorite parts about doing all of this is I get the opportunity to interact with these people, and hopefully give them some, like, I guess just hope for the future, like show them some light at the end of the tunnel. Like, hey, there might be a way out of this for all of us, for all of you. And that's been really, really cool. I've had a lot of people, you know, reach out to me and ask me what they can do to be a part of the study. I wish I could help them more. It's basically just comes down to, all right, just like apply and they'll either say yes or no. Like, that's the only thing I did. And I just kind of happened to get lucky and get it. I've had a few people reach out and just say, like, don't have a disability, but I'd like the Neuralink. I'm like, cool, man. Like, like, yeah, I mean, like, I don't see why not. And someday, hopefully, but I can't really help you there. So, I mean, it's been a pretty cool response, though. Lots of people have been really nice about it. It breaks my heart for all the people that have to, like, go through what they're going through. I mean, I have it fairly easy, relatively, as far as like being a quadriplegic goes. I have a great support system. I wasn't on a ventilator for very long, maybe like a couple weeks, and that would have changed my life completely. Like, there's just so much that I'm grateful for and I'm thankful for, and I thank God for it all the time, because like it could have been so much worse for me. And so hearing other people who are in much like worse situations, who have higher level of injuries, it's so horrible. And so I would, like, my focus on Neuralink specifically is like the immediate, how can it help people with disabilities? I know people talk about, like, you know, worried about the future and integrating with like machine and AI and all these things. It's going to like read your thoughts and, you know, download stuff into your brain. That's all above my head, honestly. I just know how amazing it'll be for people with disabilities at first and foremost. And so that's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, I think with any like crazy, you know, nascent technology or new technology, like a Neuralink, there's just going to be so much fear attached to it. I know, like on the Rogan pod, I was listening to it. Like, you could tell Rogan's freaked out. Like, Rogan's like, I don't know if you listen to his podcast a lot, but he's like, well, that's one of his fears, you know, AI is going to take over the world. And I think it's healthy to have a certain amount of skepticism for future technologies. Like, I don't think we should blindly just like, you know, say, yeah, just do everything, right? Like just let's do everything. Let's not put any sort of like barriers up or whatever. And like, that's another question I had before I throw it over to Hans. Is how has this changed that for you? Like, did you have any preconceived notions as it related to this type of technology or any like game-changing technology? Has this changed your perception at all?
Yeah, I had no idea what Neuralink was before I applied. So I wasn't in this realm at all. I just started even like dipping my toe into things like AI, where I was like, wow, this stuff is incredible. It's going to change the world. Like, the amount of like power that are at people's fingertips at this point, it's only going to grow exponentially. And so like, having been thrust into this world, into this tech world, I'm honestly really excited because I see the possibilities. I didn't know much about it beforehand. So it's like, it's hard to say if my perspective changed much. I think I am on the receiving end of a lot of the positive side of this. The very human side of all of this. And I know that there are, you know, I know that there are some like ethical concerns about just regular people getting this and whether or not we should, and how right is it for a normal person to go in and get brain surgery just to enhance themselves in some way. Like, I know all of that, and I hear it all, and I'm trying to learn more about it so I can be a better advocate at some point, or like have some sort of good answers for it. But at this point, all I can think of is, look, it's going to maybe cure paralysis. It's going to maybe cure blindness and other disabilities that have been plaguing people since the beginning of time. So like, why wouldn't we push forward into this? And I'm not saying that we need to blindly do anything, but to have had a taste of this already and see how much it's changed my life, and to see behind the curtain a bit, like, it's not something that I think people should be running away from at this point. And we're at the very beginning where, you know, if we need to start talking about regulations, or we need to start talking about, you know, how we can make sure this doesn't get out of hand, then we do it now, but I mean, I'm sure that won't happen until it gets, you know, out of hand to begin with. People will start, you know, talking about, oh, see the slippery slope, it's back there. So like, I'm not sure what's going to happen, but I don't know.
Yeah. We all know how quick regulation is to respond to things, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, think of the, like the AI art thing. It's just like, they're still, the government's still just like, oh yeah, it's allowed. No, it's not allowed. They're still trying to catch up, and I don't know. It's just kind of a shit show, honestly.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate just how willing you are to talk openly about this, because like somebody like the, literally the first human trial of Neuralink, like you have the technology inside of you and you're actively using it, and it's having you sort of almost banging the drum on it a little bit is going to raise some attention. It's all going to be positive, you know. Hans, I don't want to hog up all 90 minutes because I easily can. Please jump in.
Well, so I'm wondering if just for the audience's sake, we should kind of have you explain, Nolan, what is a Neuralink? Like, what is going on with the technology? How does it work? And what does it allow you to do? Obviously, a big part of our audience is going to know that already. But, you know, since it is a more Tesla-specific audience, some of them probably aren't as deep into the weeds of what Neuralink does. And so, yeah, I was just thinking that might be maybe a good primer, and then we can dive into some even more interesting technical topics.
Yeah. So immediately, I guess one of the easiest ways to describe it is it's just a chip with 64 threads, 32 electrodes on each thread that's implanted into my motor cortex. And it is reading my like neurons firing, the signals that translate to like movement, basically. So anytime you move, basically your neurons fire in your motor cortex and it sends a signal down. My spinal cord is like basically shut off at one point, so that signal doesn't get all the way down, but it's still firing. And that signal is picked up by these electrodes on the threads, and through an app that Neuralink has developed and put on a computer at this point, machine learning takes over, and I train a model basically to understand my intention. So anything that I'm trying to do, it learns over time, and then that translates to cursor control on a computer and eventually other things. It's still very, very early days. I think I just hit, oh wow, today's 5 months, the 28th. Yeah. So happy anniversary. Wow. So so it's still very early days, and I'm the first person, and they're focusing on a lot of different parts to this, but immediately it let me control a computer, and so I can control a cursor just as well as anyone else can at this point. And yeah, that's about it. I think that's basically it, as far as how it works.
And how long does this trial run for? So if you're 5 months in, how much longer do you have left?
Yeah, so the main part of the trial is 1 year in the study. And after that point, I can choose to stay in if I would like to for up to an additional 5 years. So it's a 6-year study. I could technically leave whenever I want to. I could call them up today and say, you know, I've had enough, I'm over it. And they would talk about, you know, where we go from there. Basically, when I want out or when the study ends, we'll do one of two things. We will either, they will go in and take the implant out, so an explantation, or they will deactivate it and they'll leave it in until maybe one day I get it upgraded.
Got it. So can you hear my dogs?
Yeah.
They're like, no, keep it in. One of the things that was really cool listening to on the Rogan podcast was sort of the machine learning piece of it. So it's like, I think one of the things that is interesting about this day and age, and this is like something that I really love to nerd out about, is that it seems like the way Neuralink learns, or the way Neuralink extrapolates its decisions, let's say, like what it's going to do, it's not based on, like, let's say, traditional heuristics where you're like, if Nolan does this, then this, if, you know, if moves finger here, then this. It's more like there's a system that's created, and then depending what you want to map to that system, that's how the cursor will move. And so like you can use your finger, your foot, your toes, your nose, your cheeks, whatever. And then the system is smart enough to tailor itself to what you decide you want to use to move the cursor around. Did I explain that correctly?
Yeah, yeah. It's actually one of the things I'm really excited about with Neuralink, because in my mind, one of the first things I was asking them, I remember when they were coming to explain this for the first time after I'd been selected, leading up to the surgery, they were trying to describe how all of the technology works. And my first thoughts were, well, if you can just map any of these intentions to different actions, then what would stop me from, you know, using left hand, right hand, left foot, right foot, you know, shoulder shrugs and everything to do, you know, 10 different things on the computer at once? And they said, well, that's the goal, basically. Like, you know, you can use your left hand on a keyboard and your right hand for a cursor. You could move like different screens around with your feet. You can like as many things as you can move at once and like keep, I guess, separate in your mind, you can do interact with any of these devices. And in my mind, it's not just a computer. Like if you start mapping it to something like, you know, people who are interested in Tesla or know Tesla would know about like the Optimus robot and stuff. Like that's not far off to say that the Neuralink would be able to connect to that at some point, and then you'd be able to control it just like you would be able to control your own body, or multiple of them at once. And it's not even just like attempting to move these body parts. It's just thinking, you know, like I want my hand to go here, or I want this to go there, and it does it. So it's something that we've worked a bit on with different like clicks. So there are like different signals, weaker and stronger signals that different parts of my body get. So right now, like take my right hand, for instance, my right index finger actually gives off a bit weaker of a signal than say my right pinky does. So when I was first learning how to click, we used my right pinky for a left click instead of my left index finger. So you can take any different action. Like I did a hand squeeze. I did like a raise your right arm. I did like a foot press down, all of these different things to be a left click. And we just decided whichever one gave the best signal. So you can map all of these things to different sorts of actions on the computer and stuff. I know like a month ago we started doing like sign language finger spelling for letters. So I know the sign language alphabet. And although like I can't physically do it, I'm still like attempting to do it. And I know that in my mind, it's still sort of happening. And so all the machine learning part of this does is takes what I'm trying to do and translates it to whatever letter say is popping up on the screen. And then I can spell things, and it's super freaking cool.
Did they explain to you why that is, as far as, you know, why your left pinky or your right pinky is a stronger signal than your index? Is that just because of where the electrodes happen to be, that they're closer to like pinky neurons instead of index finger neurons? Or?
Yeah, I think that has something to do with it. I think it has a lot to do with like what threads are left in my brain and where those electrodes are. I know that like something like 85% of the electrodes aren't even in my brain anymore, or like near any neurons. So it's only about 15% that are left. And so whatever's close by, and you know, the brain is plastic and it's always changing. So like the neurons don't do the same things on a day-to-day basis. So on one day where, you know, we might get a super strong signal from, say, my index finger, that same signal, that same model that we built from that click might not be as good the next day, because the neurons change function on a day-to-day basis sometimes, where one neuron might be devoted to index finger one day, but then the next day it's shifted over towards a little bit more like thumb action. So it's just different, and it's constantly, the models are constantly learning, and you know, it's trying to learn my brain, and my brain's trying to, like me personally, I'm trying to understand what the algorithm is trying to extrapolate from what I'm giving it. And so it's like a give and take, like we're both learning from each other and trying to utilize whatever we can in order to make this as best as possible. It's like I'm working with the machine a lot.
This is the nerdy shit that I just freaking love, dude.
It's pretty cool.
So then this means that every day there's some sort of remapping that has to happen to try and compensate for that shift in the neurons potentially, right? So is that part of your daily routine every morning? Like you go and it's like, okay, I got to sort of clean up how I'm mapping to Neuralink?
Yes and no. So at the beginning, that was definitely what was happening. It was a daily thing of, you know, we need to remap this, we need to redo it, I need to recalibrate. So it's like a daily recalibration and stuff. Cursor on, I just accidentally opened something up when I said calibrate. Yeah, lots of voice controls.
We'll keep this in.
Yeah, cursor off.
We'll keep the bugs in.
Yeah, cursor off. Okay, so like I had to redo that every day, basically. And so a lot of learning at the beginning was how to make these models and how to make the algorithm more robust, how to make sure that I didn't have to do something like that every day. And at the beginning, it was something like, you know, 45 minutes in order to get a good model, something that I could use, something that I could perform with at the level of a normal person, basically. And so if I had to do that 45 minutes every day, like it's just not feasible. Like no one's going to want to do that. Like Neuralink would be, you know, dead in the water at that point. And so they were trying to figure out a way to shorten that time and to make it so I could use a model, use the same thing that was trained today, use it, you know, tomorrow, the next day, a week down the road. And so I think we're finally at that point where like I haven't done any sort of that like remapping in, geez, a couple of weeks, and I'm still running off that same model that we trained. So we're constantly learning about stuff like that. And I don't think this is the end either. I think that it'll get better where, I mean, I've talked about the dream being basically that every time you connect, the Neuralink will remap everything on its own. So you don't have to go through any sort of remapping, like waste any of your own time. It just will understand your brain and what's going on so well that it knows like what it needs to do in order to like change things around, or as simple as like a quick calibration that you would do, like a cursor calibration on a computer or something for the first time, where you like click some bubbles, you click some dots, you calibrate your TV for the first time, where dang, son of a biznatch, I did it again. Cursor on.
You can say bitch, it's okay.
Yeah, cursor on. So like it basically just to make sure that like it's easy as that, could take a couple seconds where you do like a quick, easy task and then it will learn from that and you'll be good to go for the day. So I think that's something that they're going to work on, but it's, like I said, it's still early days.
So how much of that remapping that you were having to do there at the beginning was because those threads were pulling out, and the 15% of the threads that are left, are they seeming to be staying in position fairly well right now, or is there kind of continued movement?
No, they're stable now. It's something that I asked a lot, especially like after we found out about the thread movement, was, are they still moving? Like, what are the odds that, you know, I'm going to lose complete control of this at some point? There's no evidence at this point that they're moving at all anymore. It seems like what's in there will be in there for the remainder of however long I'm in the study. And then I imagine that at the beginning, it was a lot to do with, you know, the thread movement, how much it was moving, and how much the threads were moving. And so it was really hard to get like a stable signal from day to day. I mean, the threads were moving basically as soon as cursor off, as soon as like I had surgery, as soon as surgery was done, basically some of the threads were moving, some of the threads were already out. So it definitely had something to do with it, but I think a lot of it was also just them tuning in the software side of things, them tuning in the machine learning, the algorithm, in order to make the system more robust. So it could like learn from, you know, a given set of data just better. Like a lot of it too is the amount of data that's put in. So if, you know, I do a mapping for 5 minutes, that's not going to be as robust as if I do something for, you know, an hour. So if I can do something on one day and have that work for that day, maybe the next day it's not as good. So if I did like a mapping, say, for an hour one day, it might not work out that great tomorrow. But at the end of the week, if you could take all of the data from that week and put it all together, then there's a pretty good chance that that model will end up lasting a lot longer. So they're just, it's things like that that just take time to learn and time to put the effort in and really get something that is usable.
What I find so interesting about that is it sounds so similar to just what one has to do to train an AI model for like just something on like the computer. Like if I use an example on the channel, we have a, I don't know if you're familiar with 11 Labs, but it's a software that does, it's an AI voice creator. So you feed it a bunch of data of your own voice, let's say. And then depending how many hours of data you feed it, that makes the model get better or worse, right?
Yeah.
So, and Hans and I were freaking fighting with this model for, I don't know, a week or two, trying to figure out how to get this thing to sound like I did. And we would put tests out there in YouTube. And then the ones that had more of my voice, people couldn't tell. And the ones that had less of my voice, people are like, what the fuck is this? This sounds terrible.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah. So it's just so fascinating that this sort of, this new AI age or machine language age, I guess you want to call it, or whatever you want to call it, it has such far-reaching implications. Like this, the variety of uses for these things is truly mind-blowing. Excuse the pun, but it's like, it really is. It's freaking mind-blowing.
Pretty amazing. Like I said, I'm new to all this. So like, I'm still learning everything, like kind of along with a lot of people who had never heard of like even Neuralink. Like I'm right there. So I just kind of got thrust into it all. And now I'm in the deep end and I'm just trying to tread water, trying to keep my head above water, like make sure I'm trying to learn as much as possible and understand as much as possible and try to be, like I said, a good advocate for all this.
Have you happened to read Tim Urban's blog post on Neuralink?
No, I haven't.
I would highly recommend it. It's the one, the magical wizard hat one.
No, I haven't. One of my buddies sent it to me a long time ago, and he said that, I think that's the one, he said it was super long, but it's really worth reading.
Yeah, it is super long, but it's the best resource that's out there on the internet that I'm aware of to kind of understand the high level, like the nitty gritty of how it works all the way up to the high level of like what the goal of Neuralink is long term and everything. Yeah, very exceptional piece. And Tim Urban's a great writer. He does an incredible job at helping a reader come, you know, go from zero understanding to an actual very deep level of understanding of a topic. And that's why it's so long. But not only does he use, you know, he's good at the writing part, he draws little stick figure animations that are pretty hilarious that go along with it and helps it to, yeah, be engaging and really explain the concepts well. So highly recommend that.
Yeah, it was sent to me a while ago. I just haven't gotten around to reading it.
Yeah, Tim Urban, anything Tim Urban is like amazing. He published a book as well recently. What was the name of the book, Hans? Oh my god.
What's Our Problem? To go back to the beginning. Yeah, it was all about why politics in the United States is so messed up right now.
So that's why I'd much rather be here than watch that debate again. One of the things that that was interesting you were talking about was, hey, like there's technically no limit to, let's say in the long term, like the inputs, how many inputs I can have into Neuralink and what the outputs will be. It's a kind of like humans can, I can blink, breathe, move my hands and arms and legs, you know, at the same time. So those signals are coming out of the brain, right? And so your brain's doing exactly the same thing. It's just like, okay, so now it's extrapolating those signals into those individual outputs and sort of the mechanical things that would move based on those outputs. Is that, so what is the limiting factor there? Is that the number of threads or is that the number of neural links? Like, help me understand that.
Yeah, I imagine it's probably the threads and the electrodes in my mind, from my understanding. My implant and the amount of threads I have is already like an order of magnitude more than the next, like BCI, the next closest BCI. And they're planning on, I think, doubling that for the next participant and maybe even doubling it again for the ones that follow. So, you know, mine had has 1,024 electrodes on it. I think the next one is going to be in the 2,000 range or 3,000 range. And the next one after that is going to be 6,000. And so just the more parts of the brain that it can get to, I think the more capability that it will have. Also, I know that it might also be a number of Neuralink chips themselves. So maybe a little bit of both, because I know that you can implant these in different parts of the brain. And so in my mind, just the more threads means you could stretch it across the brain more, but I guess the implant's not that big. So maybe you would have to do, like, I had a talk with Elon maybe a week and a half ago or 2 weeks ago about implanting another chip on the other side of my skull. So that way I have like left hemisphere, right hemisphere, and I would be able to, you know, control like left and right hand a bit easier and different things like that. So maybe it is like more chips. In my mind, I just thought that, you know, longer threads, more threads, then you would be able to reach more parts of the brain, but maybe you need to put like strategically placed threads in different places. I'm not 100% sure, but I also think that it's just going to be one of those things where like the people that grew up with the internet and grew up with computers are so much better at multitasking and so much better at controlling it and using it than others that came before them. Like if you asked my mom to do three things on a computer, it would take her like an hour. Like people that grew up with it, it would take them, you know, seconds, minutes or something. I think that as Neuralink becomes more widespread, as it becomes something that is more commonplace, that people, you know, possibly even grow up with the Neuralink or grow up in a world around Neuralink, that it's just going to become second nature where they're able to do, you know, 3, 4, 5 times, 10 times as many things as I'm able to do now without even having to think about it. It's just going to be second nature.
Speaking of things that you can do now, so one of the things, and I think if I remember correctly, you said this with Ellie, is that you can now control your cursor directly just by thinking about moving the cursor instead of thinking about moving your hand. How is that going? Is that continuing to improve? And, you know, what are the implications of that?
Yeah, it's something that I guess was most surprised about with the whole process. In my mind, it makes a lot of sense that Neuralink works as I attempt to like move my hand. Like in my mind, there's just a disconnect in my spinal cord. So all the signals are still being sent. I know that they're still there. I know that my neurons are still firing. They just can't get all the way down to my hand and back up. So when I move my hand and I see on like a screen that I see my neurons spiking and that, you know, that translates to like what my hand movement would be, like that all makes sense to me. When I moved it, the cursor for the first time, just by thinking about it, it was like, I was giddy all day. It just completely blew my mind. Like I was so surprised by the whole thing, because that isn't intuitive. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me how that works exactly. But I knew from that point on that other things that they were planning, like the finger spelling thing where I'm, you know, doing the sign language alphabet, even though I'm doing like A and B and C with my hand, I know that the more I train models to learn that, the more data I give it, then the better it's going to be at understanding what I want to do without me actually having to move that body part. And so with me, the cursor was just one thing. It was kind of a gateway. Like, okay, I know this is possible. I know that if I train it, on like my movement, then I can eventually get it where I don't have to move and I can just think about it and it does exactly what I want it to do anyways. So if I'm taking that and, you know, reaching down the road or looking down the road, I'm thinking, okay, what else can I train it to do? And then it'll just do on its own by me thinking. Will this translate to complete like thought translation, where if I think If I like write a word 1,000 times, then well, I just need to think that word and it pops up. If I do an action on the screen or do an action on some other device 1,000 times, well, I just need to think about that action from now on and it pops up. Like instead of going down and clicking on my internet browser, is it something where like as long as there is some sort of direct connection, like I can see where my internet browser is on my screen, or I know like what it takes to get there, that can I just think that and the Neuralink will understand what I'm trying to do and it'll open it. I mean, there's so many things that I think down the road are going to be fun to explore, because I don't know if any of this is true. I don't know if that all translates, if it's one-to-one or if it's taking a bit too much of a leap, but in my mind, like, it worked with the cursor control. Why wouldn't it work with other stuff?
The first time that you were able to move that cursor just by thinking about it, do you feel like it was more on the algorithm side that Neuralink is developing, that it was understanding your intention? Or was it your brain on your side mapping the intention to the action? Like, or how much of it is, you know, is it their side, your side, and or both?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. One thing that I noticed, which was kind of crazy when I saw for the first time, was they showed me my neuron spikes in real time as I was trying to do stuff. So I was, you know, trying to move my hand to the right, left, up, down, say. And every time I went to move my hand, I saw the neuron spike fire before I even attempted to move. And it sort of took me a second to realize why that made sense. In my mind, it shouldn't have spiked until I went to move. But then I thought, okay, well, it's just how people move and go about their lives every day. If you go to try and grab something or catch something, you don't wait for your body to respond to that like action. Your body kind of has to send the signal down to your hand and all the way back up before you actually move. Like it all has to happen so fast, and it has to understand what your intention is kind of before you do it, like muscle memory and things. So taking all of that and then knowing what I know about like how the like mapping and stuff works and how it learns what I learn, it showed me that after a while feeding it data, the algorithm started to anticipate what I wanted to do faster sort of than what I wanted to do, than faster than what I was even thinking. And what I've shown Neuralink and what I've explained to them is that when I start a new model, when I start training a new model, it doesn't work with like immediately with the imagined movement, with like thought control, basically. I can't start out using a model just by thinking. I have to train it through attempted movements, through actually moving my hand until it understands what I'm trying to do before I can control it with my thoughts. So it's not something where I can just hop in now and start moving a cursor with my brain like from the get-go. I have to train it how like what movements apply to like what intentions. And then from there, once it understands that, then I can start moving it around my brain.
I mean, in my mind, it almost sounds like, you know, the signal is propagating almost down like a stream that kind of branches and branches and branches and branches. And so like the algorithm is mapping it from where that stream ends, and it's trying to like get further and further back up to the wherever the root source of that signal that's closer to the intention than the actual action. And like as long as you give it enough time to go back up the river far enough, like it finds where that intention originates and then starts to work. That's crazy.
It's like that, literally, like the machine, the model has the endpoint, and I'm guessing it has to be capturing the beginning point in some way, right? Like even though it's not intuitive for us to think about the beginning point, like intent, it being a beginning point, is being captured somewhere. And so over time, the model is smart enough to say, forget the result. Just give me the intent. That's all I need. I just need the two things. I just need to know how they correlate together. So when I see intent, I can go, boom, I can go do the action. Dude, you just, this is freaking crazy. This is unbelievable.
It's wild.
This is unbelievable.
Yeah.
So how does it feel to be the first human being with telepathy?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the telepathy thing. It's hard to wrap my mind around sometimes. First, I never like considered it telepathy. It took me a while to come around to the term because in my mind, it was more like telekinesis. It was more like affecting something with my mind, like moving something with my mind, like moving a cursor with my mind. But then, you know, I start doing this more and I realize it's a conversation that I'm having like with the computer, with Neuralink, with the like algorithms and stuff. And so it's almost like a two-way street, honestly. It's very interesting to think that like I'm learning from it in the same way that it's learning from me. And how we kind of like pull each other up at times. Like it, I help it along in ways that, you know, it can't fully understand. And I think it does the same for me. We both pull each other up and like make each other better, I guess. That's a bad way of putting it. But yeah, it's interesting. I think it makes sense. Yeah, I think it's interesting. I don't think much about like being the first or anything. I just think less so about like being the first, more like being the first of many. I just am trying to make this as useful as possible for everyone that comes down the road and work as hard as I can in order to make it the best product possible and to make it as interactive as possible and make the user interface as easy as possible for everyone that comes after me. And all I keep thinking is, you know, the amount of effort I put in will directly affect all of the people that come after me. But at the same time, I just want more people to be a part of the study because I can only do so much on my own. Like once, you know, we get 2, 3, 4 more people in here, then they're going to think of things that I never would have thought of in a million years. They're going to experience things and use it in ways that I would have never thought to use it. And it's just going to grow at a much, much faster rate. And so, I don't know. I'm just excited to like finally get the ball rolling with this, honestly.
Dude, this is so cool. I think the thing that I'm having a tough time conceptualizing and is a question. I guess I'll ask it now. I was going to say it for later, but I'll ask it now. So it's like, this is output right now. Like it's, so there's nothing coming in. I don't think, right? It's just out. Right. So how have you conceptualized the in? Like have you thought about it? Like what is that even?
Yeah. The reading versus writing, you know, like is it reading, the brain signals, yeah, okay, but can it write onto the brain? No, not yet. That's something that I think about a lot because it's something that gets brought up. I mean, obviously people think about it all the time. Like, okay, so it's reading your thoughts, right? Is it like putting anything in there? I think I made a joke the other day, a joke that's been made probably 1,000 times at this point, that it's just a constant loop of like never going to give you up, that Elon is like shooting into my brain.
He would fucking do that.
Yeah, I know, right? Just constantly being Rickrolled. It's hard for me to imagine how it's possible on one hand. On the other hand, I just think if it's able to read my intent so well, then there's got to be a way at some point to like put something in there to like close that loop in a different way. I don't know. I think it's possible. I think it's going to be possible. I think that, you know, especially with the stuff that they're doing with the blind, with being able to like map a whole field of vision for people. I think things like that are more closely related to being able to like write onto the brain. And that's even a little bit different because I think it's writing onto like the eyeball, the whatever it's called, the
optical nerve or whatever.
Optical nerve, yeah, the optical nerve. It's a bit different, but I just don't see how it's not going to be possible at some point. And this is where it gets a little bit like hairy for me, because like I said, I just got like thrown into this world. And so I don't know like all of the ethical concerns, like what I should or shouldn't be for at this point. Like, should I be telling people, yeah, like freaking go out and get it. Like, don't worry at all. Am I just like propagating this huge machine that's going to put Neuralinks in everyone and then everyone's going to be under mind control? Like, I don't freaking know. Am I going to be like an actual progenitor of Skynet, like I've joked about on X, where I'm just like, oh yeah, like guys, don't worry about it. Look how great it is for me. And then, you know, 30 years down the road, it's like some post-apocalyptic wasteland where like everything is controlled by Neuralink and no one has a way out or anything. And it's all going to come back to this one moment of like, don't worry about it, guys. Like, it's fine. Like, we're just here to help. Like, I don't know. And I don't know these things. And I don't know that it's my job to have those answers. I feel like I should think about it more, maybe. And maybe I like the fact that I'm doing so much media and I'm talking to people like y'all, because it makes me think about these things and I get to ask questions and I get to, you know, get answers from people and start getting like the word out there. And maybe in some way we'll find a way to avoid something like that. I don't think it's not going to be possible at some point to like right onto the brain. I don't know that we know enough about the brain yet to make that happen. Like, we're constantly learning about the brain, even in the study. Like, what blew my mind was we didn't know how much the brain even pulsed when they put the Neuralink in. Like, they were expecting my brain to pulse, because, you know, the brain pulses with every heartbeat. They were expecting it to pulse at 1 millimeter of movement, and my brain pulsed at 3 millimeters of movement. That's on a scale of like 3 times as much as they were suspecting. And I was like, how do you not know that? Like, it doesn't make sense to me that at this point in time, we didn't know just how much the brain moved. But it's just little things like that. And then things that, you know, we work on in Neuralink every day during my sessions. Like, one that has us freaking tripping out right now is the fact that like when I'm moving a cursor and it's like, say, super unstable, we're working on like a lot of different ways to make the UI better and how to make the process better. And so at the very beginning, like, the process is a bit dicey. Like, it's kind of hard to get the cursor to move exactly where you want it to at the very, very beginning, while you're like training it. So they're trying to like quicken that process and stuff. But one thing that we've realized is the cursor moves much, much differently when my eyes are open and closed. And we don't know why. Like, we just have no idea why. Why, like, when I'm staring at the screen trying to move a cursor, it's incredibly shaky. But as soon as I close my eyes, the cursor is, like, still and it doesn't move at all. I could still move it with my eyes closed. Like, if I tried, I can close my eyes and move the cursor around. So, but for some reason, like, there's some sort of, like, feedback loop where when I see the cursor moving on the screen and it's shaking, my brain is trying to control it, like adjust for it, while I am attempting to control it. And us, like me physically, my brain and the algorithm, we're all fighting each other at the same time, trying to get the cursor to stay still. But as soon as I close my eyes, it's perfectly still. Like, there are things like that that we just have no idea about. So I think that, you know, in due time, with more people that come into the study and with the amount of data that gets fed into this, we're just going to learn so much about the brain. Like, already 5 months in, and you could probably write 1,000, 100,000 PhDs on the amount of data that we've collected about the amount of things that we've learned. So it's only going to grow, and we're only going to learn more about the brain. So I just think, like, in the next 100 years, things are going to be like so much different. Like, it's so much different.
What I didn't appreciate up until this point, Nolan, is like just the level of insight you guys are gathering into how the brain works that we didn't previously understand, by way of having a combination of enough threads in the brain, having a model, and somebody like you that's able to communicate exactly what's happening. Like, that is opening up a whole world of data that, like this is like... I'm having so much fun right now.
I know. One thing that they constantly talked about at the beginning more so was just how excited they were to finally have this in a person. And I'm like, yeah, guys, like I'm excited too. It's really cool. And they're like, no, like you don't understand. We've been working with monkeys for years and it's really hard when a monkey is doing something on the screen and you're asking a monkey to complete a task. It's really hard to know if they're doing what you want them to do. Like, you can tell if a cursor goes from point A to point B that, okay, they are intending that to happen. But if you want them to go from point A to point B and they go in a completely different direction or the cursor doesn't move, you don't know if it is the algorithm freaking out or if it's the monkey like losing focus or anything like that. You don't know like what's going on. You don't know like, cause there's no feedback from the monkey. There's no like conversation going on. And it's something that I've really come to appreciate about this whole process is that having someone who can vocalize what's going on is invaluable. And being able to explain to them the things that like I'm experiencing and feeling, it's really, really amazing for the technology and for the field. And getting this into people is just so important. I mean, I'm lucky, I think, that I'm able to at least conceptualize and explain things in a way that I feel like people are able to understand. And I've been really blessed with that, like being able to communicate with people in a way that I feel like really brings people at like eye level. And I've felt like Neuralink has really benefited from that as well, as much as I have from all of like the whole study and everything. But it's just been so nice to have that level of communication and to be able to show them like exactly what is going on with me. It's something that I've been trying for 8 years to explain to people. The fact that, you know, I can still feel my hand. I can still feel the fact that I'm trying to move and I can feel all of my fingers wiggling at any point. And people will be like, okay, well, like phantom pain, phantom, you know, limbs, like we get it. But like, you're not actually doing anything. And it's like, yeah, I know I'm not, but I can feel it all. And then to see that visually on a screen with like my neurons firing real time, it's so validating. And then to be able to show them like, this is exactly what I'm feeling. And this is why the model is behaving this way. And I believe that this part of my body is resulting in, you know, this part of the algorithm being confused. Like it's so interesting. And the amount of data that we're collecting, I don't think they'll be able to analyze it in like the next few years, maybe not ever in our lifetime with the amount of people that are working at Neuralink right now. They need to grow by 10 times as much in order to start analyzing like all of the data that we've collected. I've already like made them revamp their whole system like 3 or 4 times because the amount of data that I've collected has just like broken all of their like databases, whatever their like how robust their system is. They just don't have enough. I don't know. They're just not. Yeah, they need
can't
to,
keep up with the flood of data and just results, right? I mean, yeah. I think that's the as impressive as this whole thing has been, Nolan, it still feels like it's massively underappreciated for exactly the reason that you described. It's so esoteric, right? It's not something that I think most of the public, like as soon as you say machine learning, most people are like, well, I'm done, right? And it's not like they're dumb. It's just like they're busy. Like they only got time to figure out what the hell machine learning is, right? Or like a model. But it's like the fact that you're able to gather so much data around how the brain behaves and be able to validate so much of what you were feeling but weren't able to tie to data, right? It just really shows how early we are in studying the brain. It's still now.
Yeah.
And that's what's crazy. It's like 2024. We seem to know so much about like the most mundane stuff. But when it comes to like what arguably could be the most important, like the thing that separates us from every other species that's ever existed on this planet, it seems like we still know almost nothing. And bro, like you are leading it. What the hell? How's that feel?
I don't think much about it. I'm really Come excited. No, I'm really excited because in my mind, I feel the same way. I'm like, why why isn't this gaining more traction? Why aren't people more like pumped up about this? Because the amount that we're going to learn about the brain from, like, I know this is all like in the tech field. People talk about this in regards to like Elon Musk and the AI and, you know, all the, you know, future capabilities and stuff like that, blah, blah, blah. But in my mind, I'm like, guys, the amount that we're going to learn about the brain from this, it could like change like how we interact with like, you know, the brain, what we do in like the medical field. It could change like everything about like what we understand about ourselves even. And so it's just, it's so exciting to me. And I just love being a part of it. I feel like I'm just giddy being a part of it all the time. I'm like, I'm just so, like, the fact that I even got selected was just bizarre. So in my mind, I'm just like, I'm just trying to enjoy the ride. But it's not like, I don't know. It's just really cool. It's really cool to be a part of.
So what are the discussions like inside about, you know, conditions like Alzheimer's or dementia or some of those things? Cause that's, you know, the amount of insight that this process is going to generate on not only physical disabilities, but like mental illnesses is going to be like game changing for neuroscience and psychology and psychiatry and like all that stuff.
Yeah. I don't know much about it. I know that there are ways in which implanting these threads into people's brain can physically alter like the, even some of, I don't know about the chemistry, but how the brain works in certain ways. Like, you know, there are already implants to help people, to help prevent like seizures and stuff in people's brains. There are already ways that they are implementing these things to help people with different disabilities. And I know, I've heard that, you know, Alzheimer's is something that even Elon Musk has talked about one day being able to cure and solve. And I think that, like I've said, just understanding the brain more is only the first step to that. I don't know exactly like how it works. I know that even someone like Joe Rogan has talked about, you know, being able to implant threads into someone's brain and then flip a switch and, you know, experience different like, I don't know, drug highs or something. That's obviously where he would go with something like this. But
shout out Rogan.
Yeah. But you know, different ways in which it can interact with the brain. And, you know, if you're feeling like depressed, you push a button on your phone and the Neuralink like, you know, activates a little part of your brain that makes you a bit happier or something. Like, there are different ways to interact with the brain that I think we're barely scratching the surface of. I don't really know much about like Alzheimer's or dementia in order to like what it actually does to the brain physiologically or anything. So I'm not sure how the Neuralink would help that specifically, but I know that it's in the works. I know that it's possible. I guess I hope that it's possible. I know, like I said, I've seen behind the curtain with some of this stuff, and it seems like we're just now getting a handle on some of those basic things about the brain that I'm surprised we don't know about, haven't known about at this point.
So coming back to, you know, your implant and the 15% of the threads that you have left, like, have they told you what they think the upper limit of what you're going to be capable is, or is that something that you guys just have to discover together? Or
yeah, I think it's a learning experience for all of us. I don't know that we fully understand like what I'm capable of at this point. A lot of what I've been doing for the last, geez, month and a half, 2 months maybe, has been trying to improve the UI for the people that come after me. So make the processes that I have gone through for the last 4 months much simpler, much easier, much more accessible, much more intuitive to the people that come after me. So at the very beginning, it was a lot of explorative, like, you know, what am I capable of doing? Can I do, you know, X, Y, or Z with the Neuralink? And now it's a lot more of, okay, well, now that we know I'm capable of these things, let's fine tune them to the point where the next people that come after you will have a much easier time learning and, you know, getting a grasp on things. I think once they get more people in the study, maybe that'll change, or maybe that'll just be my role from now on, is to just help them really like fine tune all of these things. They're still working on like different things here and there, but the team that I work with, they're spread pretty thin to the point where like they can't work on, you know, 10 different things that I might be capable of. So like I said, we were doing like the fingerspelling part of all of this. And I think there was one guy working on that at one point, and that's just not enough. We were doing like, you know, Mario Kart at the very, very beginning. And then I had two people come out to my house like maybe a month and a half ago and worked on it for a couple of days. And that's about the extent of being able to connect to like a Nintendo Switch instead of just a computer. We haven't even touched on things like like switching to a phone or anything like that. I mean, there are just a lot of capabilities that I think we are not even like diving into yet, and maybe they'll do that with the next people. But I don't think it's limited by the amount of threads that I have in my brain. I don't think it's limited by the electrodes or anything. What we found basically is that even with the loss of threads and electrodes in my brain, I was still able to surpass like my previous records by almost like 2 full like BPS at this point on the WebGrid. And so it's getting back to some of the stuff that we were doing before. But right now they're just, I think they're really trying to get participant 2 in. And they're really trying to make it so when the second participant comes in, their like transition is very smooth. So that's basically what I work on like all the time.
Yeah. I really think that just speaks to the, like we touched on before, is like the software piece is almost more important than the hardware piece and how it's able to interpret some of the things that are coming in. Of course, the hardware, like the more threads you're going to have, the better definition you're going to have, the better fidelity, obviously. But like even with the 15% that's left, the fact that they're able to improve the algorithm, the model, the machine learning process to the point where you haven't really faced any degradation, it sounds like, from a performance perspective, it just speaks to the age that we live in. Just freaking software can make such a huge difference in so many respects, you know, not just like me coding something. It's like literally a brain chip interface can benefit from the same exact thing. The one thing you were talking about, I want to get back a little bit to the write piece, because one of the things that I was thinking through as you were going through that whole sort of like how you were thinking about the whole thing, I think the what's really interesting is the fact that it can pick up intent, right? At least we think, right? I don't know if we know for sure that I can pick up intent, but it seems like it can pick up intent, right? What is stopping the system from picking up your intent and just putting that in someone else's brain? You know, like, does it really have to go through the whole chain? So like, and that's where, like, when Elon talked about, I remember this quote from a couple years ago. I think it was on Rogan too. It's like Rogan has the biggest podcast in the world. Oh my God. He said something like, we'll be able to communicate without words. We'll just exchange thoughts. Right. And when you went through your sort of description of how it moves without you having to actually move and just thinking about moving, I'm like, okay, cool. So it sounds like it's picking it up. It sounds like it's in there somewhere. So right now the intent is linked to physical movement. But what if there's like intent with like love, right? You're looking at somebody, you're like, I have this like feeling, you know, like I'm looking at Nolan, right? I'm like, dude, this guy's freaking awesome. Like, how can I dump this feeling into your brain? It's in there somewhere, right? And then so I'm like, okay, cool. So if we go forward a little bit, are we going to get into you were talking about like, what are the ethical implications of this, right? Like where you would just have like we'll all have neural links and we all have these intents and feelings in our brain. And is it going to be like this thing where we're all going to have to like click agree before we link each other's neural link, right? Because otherwise it's like us going into a room and somebody's just shouting out racial epithets or something. And we're all like, no, don't, right? So it almost seems like there has to be like an agreement. I don't know. It just, my brain started going down that path because I'm like, okay, logistically speaking, there has to be something where two parties have to agree that they're willing to get into each other's brains. And then all bets are off at that point. Like, okay, so what do you allow? Okay, I allow you to experience my love. I allow you to experience my pain, my suffering, my hunger. It's like, how can we not end up in that place? It feels like we're going to get there, you know?
Yeah. Alexa, turn off my TV. Freaking A, keep getting this damn light. This is my damn like light keeps changing around me. Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, pop-ups galore. Like, they're just going to be able to, like, broadcast everything into your brain. I don't see how it's going to be possible. I know that Elon has talked about being able to, like, translate or transfer thoughts and things like that, like communicate with each other just by thought. That sort of stuff, it sounds really cool. I don't know how it's going to be possible, because at this point, like in order for me to even connect to my computer, it's all through a Bluetooth connection. So would everyone just be like unshared Bluetooth connections? Like, when you walk into a room, do you have to, like you said, click accept and like it, enter this like Bluetooth cloud, basically, where everyone's thoughts are just kind of like in the ether in a room? I don't know. I don't know how anything like that would work. That part of it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. It's really interesting to think about. It's really interesting to think about when you start considering the things that you would be able to like transfer into someone's brain. Like, you're talking about, like, I want this person to like feel this way, or I want this person to feel what I'm feeling in this way. Like, then gets into some real, like, I don't know, some weird kinky stuff. You can start transferring around. Like, I don't know. It's interesting. It's really interesting. I don't know. It's something that I think really goes down like a Ready Player One path, where basically people start living in a virtual world instead of living in a physical one. And I'm not super psyched about that. I had a friend write a story once about how, someone was like living their best life throughout the whole story. They're off like gallivanting across like beaches and, you know, oceans around the world with the love of their life and all of it. And it's fantastic. And then at the end of the story, you find out that it's a person who's basically next to comatose in their room, and they just have like a virtual headset on. And it's like, it's so fake. And that's not the world that I believe people want to live in. Hopefully this just is used as a tool that people use it as a way to help like communicate with each other and help better like understand each other in a way, like you're talking about, I need you to understand what I'm feeling. So like this is a way for us to like translate that maybe across certain barriers or something. But in my mind, it just goes down this deep dark rabbit hole of a way for people to stop interacting with like the world around them, like, you know, go out and touch grass.
Yeah. I think so. I agree with you. And then the other part of me where my head goes is like, how many people are out there that have incredible minds and just there's stuff going on in here that we don't really understand.
Oh yeah.
And what they're not very good at is this thing, like the word thing, or like the communication thing, or they have anxiety. They're afraid to come out. They're afraid to like put themselves out there, right? And what if this is a thing that, you know, removes that barrier, and then people can gain insight into some minds that we never we're completely just taken aback by just the beauty and how incredible it is. But it's such a double-edged sword though, right? Because I feel like one of it, like one side can't exist without the other, because that's what almost every technology we've had that's this game changing. Like if you look at smartphones, one of the greatest inventions ever. We're able to do this because of the internet and, you know, smartphones in a way and computers, but people are falling victim to social media, and depression and anxiety is at an all-time high, it seems. You know, you have a bunch of terrible stuff that comes with it. So it's like, man, dude, it's like it's so wild to think about, because it seems like you can't get the good without the bad, unfortunately. It's like talking about the bad is the most important thing, I feel like.
Yeah, I know that like part of what you're talking about, being able to let people into some of the insights into someone's brain, if someone's not able to communicate the right way with others. That was, I know, the impetus for the whole Neuralink with DJ, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, DJ CEO, DJ So, SEO, the CEO. He couldn't speak English, and he had moved over to the States, and so there was like a language barrier. He was like, if there was some way for me to communicate with these people, and the idea for Neuralink came about. And it's one of those things where like real-time translation, you can like translate these things. You can translate like either into a different language or different feelings. And then when you were just talking about that, it made me think of the people that have, I don't know what it's called. It's something like synesthesia or something, where basically they experience things in a much different way. So they experience,
they taste colors.
Taste colors. Yeah. They hear colors. They see music in color. Like, how amazing would that be to experience from someone? Like, that just sounds like it's something that we can't even like wrap our minds around, how it's possible. And for someone to go out their whole life and experience that and never have anyone else to even like communicate that with, like, they're one of a kind basically in 7-8 billion people. It's like, how do you describe that to people who have never or never will experience it? And to be able to like share that across some sort of like wavelength or just directly into someone's brains would be freaking wild. It would be so, so cool. But there is, like you said, a huge downside to all of this. And like you're talking about, like the rise of social media and the rise of anxiety and depression and stuff, like that's, it'll affect the young people most, I think, because that's where like social media is at this point. It affects like young people at such a higher rate. And so that's what I'm worried about. Even when I was talking about earlier, like kids growing up with the Neuralink, my first thought was, man, are they going to start implanting this in like children? That seems so wrong. Like, there's no way that should be allowed. Like, there's got to be like a minimum age for this sort of thing. But who the heck knows? Like, I don't know that. Like I said, that's so far down the road, and maybe it's not like my place to think about, but I can't help thinking about just like the bad, like you're talking about, the bad that could come of it if it's misused or if people take it down the wrong path. I mean, Elon Musk seems like he's all about humanity. Like, he just wants to better humanity and better people and, you know, reach for the stars and get us to the stars. But not everyone's like that, and not everyone has a good intention. So I really don't know, man.
You know, I think Hans and I share the same sort of thing about Elon. Is like, I think that's why we cover his space so closely, is because there is that sort of hope for humanity. It's awesome. And it's just really cool technology that, you know, my personal opinion oftentimes doesn't get fairly covered in media. There's usually like a, oh, Elon sucks kind of thing. I'm like, okay, well, thank you for giving me a platform.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's like, all right, I'll capitalize on this. So I want to ask you one question, because I know religion is something that's close to you. Yeah. I know Hans is also religious. I'm not particularly religious, but I know both of you are. And I would love to hear your answer here. And then I have a couple questions from X I want to throw at you from some users in the next 15. So how has this change your relationship with God? Because I know it's like something that is probably, I mean, it's obviously life-changing, and there is a technological aspect to it. I don't know if there's something about, you know, I've heard art, when I read about the technology, there are people out there, I say, oh, like, here goes Elon playing God, like, we shouldn't be doing this, blah, 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 right? But I really want to hear from somebody who is obviously somebody who holds God near and dear to his heart. How has this help me understand what you're going through, if you're comfortable sharing through that lens.
Gosh, yeah. How much time do you have?
As long as you need it, brother.
Yeah, so like, okay, so when I had my accident, I wholeheartedly felt like everything that had happened to me made me see that there is a God even more. Like, I knew where my life was headed, and I think that when I had my accident, God literally pulled me from the fire. I felt like my life was headed down such a dark path, such a path to destruction, that in some ways this was the only way to save me. And so I always felt like my accident proved to me even more that there was a God. One of my best friends told me that if anything, it showed him that there wasn't a God. I said, it just makes me see that there is. He said, it makes me see that there isn't. And it was really hard for me over the, you know, first few years to justify why God like wasn't coming to my aid. Like, why wasn't he healing me? And it's something that, you know, a lot of people struggle with when they have any sort of tragic thing happen in their life. They struggle with, you know, like, why isn't God answering my prayer? Why haven't I been healed? You know, I've prayed enough. Is it something I've done? Is it something that maybe I'm being punished for? Is it something that maybe I haven't tried? Have I not said the right things? Have I not, you know, done the right things in order to be healed? And it was, I always knew, like from the beginning, I knew that God had a purpose for my life. I didn't know what it was. I didn't expect that it was Neuralink. I didn't expect, okay, God's preparing me for, you know, to have a chip in my brain at some point and have this massive platform. I always felt like God had prepared me and made me in such a way that I was going to be speaking to people in some way in my life. I always told God that I would speak to as many people as he wanted me to, as long as he didn't make me do it as a quadriplegic. I said, I'll do it. Like, I don't mind speaking in front of people. Like, I don't mind going up on stages and everything. Just don't make me do it as a paralyzed person. This was after my accident, of course. And obviously that didn't end up happening. And so, like, it was just something that I felt really validated why God hadn't healed me. Because if he had healed me, I obviously wouldn't be in this position. If he had answered my prayers, I wouldn't be able to speak to and have the platform that I have today. And I think that it goes to show that everything God does is good. All of his plans are for good. And even though I don't understand like what is happening in my life or what his reasons are for the things that happen to me, that it all is for the good if I just believe and I trust in him. And that's something that really had a profound impact around the time when I was getting the surgery. Was I've never been at such peace going into that surgery, which is something I did not expect to happen. I always felt like I was okay with getting the surgery. Like leading up to it, I was like, yeah, I'm pretty okay with it. I'm not stressed about it, but I'm sure like as the day comes, I'll start freaking out a bit. And the day came closer and closer, like the day before, the morning of, and I was just excited. I wasn't scared at all. And it was so bizarre to me. And it's because I just threw all of my trust at God. I was like, you know, you can have it all. If this works out, I know that it's going to be amazing. If it doesn't work out, I know that it's going to help someone that comes after me. And I was just at such peace with the whole thing. And I think trusting God like that really changed my perspective on my relationship with God and how I'm supposed to interact with him. It's not, you know, God, do this for me and then I'll trust you. It's God, I'm going to trust you and whatever happens will happen. And I know that it's for the best. And I know that your plans are perfect. And I know that I want certain things to happen in my life, but that's not necessarily what's best for me. And so it really has shifted how I interact with, you know, God on a daily basis and how I interact with people around me and just where I see myself going forward. It's something that I am incredibly grateful for and something that, you know, I know I don't like being paralyzed. I don't like being handicapped. I don't like the situation that I'm in, but without it, I would have never been able to do the things that I am doing and the things that I'm going to do. And I know that it benefits God and me, honestly, more than I could have ever done for myself. So it gives me a lot of hope moving forward and it makes everything that I'm doing worthwhile. And I'm just excited to tackle every day. It's been a really, really profound experience for me, spiritually, for sure.
It's such a beautiful story. Do you feel a greater sense of purpose?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just on a daily basis, I wake up like with more in my mind to like do like what I'm capable of doing on a daily basis, what I'm capable of doing long term. But I feel like Neuralink is only the beginning for what God has planned for me, which is something that I didn't expect to happen. Like I thought, you know, Neuralink was the end all be all basically. Like once I got this, I was like, wow, God, this is your purpose for my life. Like, this is amazing. Thank you so much for bringing me here. But I feel like God is talking to me all the time about, you know, this, like Neuralink's awesome. I'm really happy that, you know, you got to do this, but this isn't like what I had planned for you. Like there are things that are going to help, you know, my kingdom and help me and help people around you more than what Neuralink is going to do. And Neuralink's a great technology that'll help people around the world, hopefully for the rest of humanity, but nothing is more important or as important as people's salvation. And I think that that is worth more than, you know, a million Neuralink inventions. And so I'm really excited to get to do what I'm doing here with Neuralink, but to get to the place where I'm coming into what God's real purpose is for my life. And I'm just trying to make my way there without making too many mistakes.
That's the sense I get just from the outside looking in. Nolan is like, you're too impressive of a person for this to just be like, okay, cool, Nolan Neuralink guy done, right? That's the sense I get. So I think it fills me with so much hope. Like, as somebody who's not, like, I wouldn't call myself religious, but I am starting to get closer to some spirituality in some sense. Like, I feel like there's a great, like, it's so weird that we're all just here. Like, come on, like, there's got to be something else going on here. And just, stories like yours. And I know you've traveled a very difficult path to get here, but it's like, just hearing you speak the way you speak about just your relationship with spirituality and sort of the journey that you've gone through is just so inspiring, brother. Truly. It's so inspiring. And I just want to thank you for being so open about it. Truly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Profound stuff, dude. All right. Let me throw you some questions from X for the last 9 minutes or so, if you have time, okay. If that's okay with you. Yep. Yeah. Okay. Cool. All right. So we were talking about it briefly. I almost wanted to leave that for the end because it's like, I'm like emotional. I don't even think I can get these fucking questions out. Let's give it a shot. All right. From at Dustin the Dad, and we talked about this briefly. What are your thoughts on the metaverse?
I don't know anything about it. I don't know anything about it. 100% no clue. I've heard of it. I have an idea of what it is. I know someone, a lady who interviewed me who did like this whole project with the metaverse. I've never even given it a second thought at the time of day. Don't know anything about it. Sorry, man. That's a terrible response to your question. And I didn't do it justice at all. I'm really sorry.
Ask better questions, Dustin. Jeez, come on, bro. All right. This is from at Tucci2000. Great handle. What's the most complex thing you have done with Neuralink?
I don't know. The most complex thing, I guess, is controlling a computer with my thoughts. Not like impressive enough. I don't know. I think
freaking impressive.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think playing video games is a pretty impressive thing. I did like some video editing. I've done like, you know, sign language fingerspelling. I think that is freaking wild. I think that's one of the most impressive things to me. I've like connected to different devices. Like I connected to a little virtual, I don't know if I can talk about that. I've connected to some different things at Neuralink. I have, oh, man. I know.
Come on, Bliss. Just let us do. Let him say it. Come on.
I've connected to like a Nintendo Switch, like different things like that. I think all that's really cool. And I know like what they're planning, and I know that this is just the beginning. So there are a lot more impressive things that it's capable of. Like I'm just trying to get the next participants in so I can do some cool stuff, dude.
Sick. From Dr. Electron X, and you may have answered this on Rogan, I can't remember, but we'll make sure he gets his question in. How does it feel? Does it feel itchy? Is it painful? How is the recovery? Is there any feelings there?
No, can't feel it unless it like bumps into something, someone hits it. I can't feel it. I keep telling people, if you like wipe my memory and told me tomorrow that I have a chip in my brain, I'd be like, you're crazy. Like there's nothing there. I can't feel it at all. The recovery was super easy. They kicked me out of the hospital like a day after surgery. I was like, I just had brain surgery. You guys sure? Like, don't you want to keep me around for observation a little longer? But no, they were like, no, you're fine. Like, it wasn't bad at all. Like, you're good. Here's like a pain prescription if you need any pain meds. I didn't take it all. Didn't take any Tylenol. Didn't feel a thing.
Awesome. From at Awoo, if he was going to give a recommendation to future Neuralink users for similar conditions, what would it be?
I don't know. Don't go handicap yourself just to be like, just to get a Neuralink. Don't do that. That's a terrible idea. if you already have a disability, then apply and maybe you'll be accepted. And enjoy it. It's super cool.
Dude, I love the fact you have dark humor, brother. It's like the best. Oh my God. Are there any specific milestones or developments you're looking forward to? This is from at talk.
Yeah, there's one in particular that I'm really, really looking forward to. I've talked with Elon about it a little bit. I know he's mentioned it a little bit. I can't wait to control an Optimus robot. I think it's going to be possible. I think it might happen while I'm in the study. I hope so. Hopefully in the next few months, maybe a year, that'd be pretty sweet. And I'd be able to control an Optimus robot. I'm really looking forward to that if it happens.
I don't know if you saw, but I put out a post after I saw your interview with Rogan, and I was like, I think that the first commercially available robot should be gifted to Nolan. So can have it, right?
I didn't see that, but hell yeah, man. I'm so down for that.
That would be sick. Elon, if you're watching, come on, bro.
Yeah, for science. Absolutely.
And I think it would be helpful too.
For science, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, are you a college football fan?
I am. Texas A&M.
Who's your Texas A&M? Okay. So I wanted to make sure before I ask this last question. How many Aggies does it take to change a light bulb?
Oh my gosh. I wanna say some really mean things to some people. Texas A&M is like the greatest school on planet Earth. The Aggies are like the best networking family that you'll ever be a part of. So people are just jealous. That's all it is. People are just jealous that they're not Aggies. That's all I can say.
The 12th man. It's that's yeah, Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football.
I was there. My first year was his first year.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, so I was there for the whole Johnny Football mania and everything.
Didn't he win the Heisman as a freshman?
He did.
Wow. Yep. That's crazy. Yeah, I went to Penn State. I'm a big college football fan. So I'm hoping this year we finally make it to the playoffs, but who knows? It's always like up and down for us. That was from @JohnCHR and a bunch of numbers. I'll put it on the screen and I'll send you his handle so you can flame him and do DMs if you'd like. Sure. Yeah. Nolan, where can people find you? I know you want to get into streaming. You've talked about doing some content as well. So where can people find you?
At Modded Quad on X. I think that's the main one. I think I have like a Twitch and YouTube and Instagram as well. I think it's all basically the same, maybe like at Nolan Arbaugh or something on Instagram, but I'm going to start streaming and stuff, and I'm going to stream to X and Twitch and YouTube and everything. So that'll probably be the best way to find me. I'm probably most active on X, but hopefully be streaming like up and steady, like maybe in the next day or two on a weekly basis. So
awesome. That green screen is going to come in handy.
I know, man. It's what it's all for, man. It's why I look like a weird idiot here sitting in front of a bunch of like green sheets and stuff.
Well, I think you look pretty cool, Nolan. Okay.
Thanks, man.
I think you look great. Yeah. All right, dude. I really appreciate you. Thank you again. Let me end the recording here. Cool. So that.